The U.S. Department of Agriculture recently announced it would be cutting more than $1 billion in funding for local food banks and schools by eliminating two programs, one that pays for schools and food banks to be able to buy from local farmers, and another centered on deliveries of food. Then the USDA canceled $500 million in food deliveries across the country, according to the Washington Post. OPB reported that last month, the president of the Oregon Food Bank said, "The state is seeing the worst rates of hunger since the Great Depression." In southern Oregon, a food pantry in Roseburg known as The Fish said that in the past year they've gone from serving more than 750 families per month to more than 1,000. Joining me in the studio to help us understand the conditions here in Ashland and other areas of the Rogue Valley are my two guests. Amy Broker is the executive director of the Ashland Community Food Bank. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you. Hi, Mike.
And Amber Ferguson is executive director of Rogue Food Unites. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's start with some background on you both and your respective organizations. Amy, we'll start with you. Tell me about the work of the Ashland Food Community Bank.
Sure. We've been around since 1972, so we're very well established in the community. We originally started as an emergency relief organization for to help people who experiencing food insecurity in our community. We now consider ourselves a line item on people's household budgets. The cost of living in our area has become quite a bit of disparity in the ability to live in our community. And so at this point, we help people pay rent by providing food. We help people pay for health care by providing food. We help people afford child care by providing food. So we're now Ashland Community Food Bank, originally founded as Ashland Emergency Food Bank.
And so what part of the family food budget would you say that food represents? What percentage?
Oh, God, that's a good question, Mike. I don't know. So I can say when I lived in a less economically secure way, my food budget could be as much as 25% of my expenditures in a month, and varies greatly depending on the size of your family. So it's quite significant. And what we offer at the food bank is up to a week's worth of food every month. So it can really make a significant difference in people's expenses.
And when you say food, what's the range? What are we talking about?
What type of food do we provide?
What type of food?
Sure. So we provide, so folks can shop off of a shopping list. They have lots of agency to choose what they would like to leave with that day. A lot of it is shelf stable, but we also often offer frozen meat, fresh eggs, fresh milk, organic apples, oranges, bananas, onions, potatoes, carrots that are freshly purchased. A lot of shelf stable food, as I already mentioned. And then we have a considerable amount of food that comes to us from our local grocers. And this is perishables that are short dated. And almost half of the food that we distributed last year came through those channels or Garden Overflow. We also partner with our local Rotary Club, who grows a beautiful organic garden, and they provide us 6,000 to 7,000 pounds of organic food every summer. And that all goes out through what we call our free table. And so what's available out there varies from day to day, but it's typically produce, bread, dairy, eggs, and deli items. And so that's on top of the standard shopping list.
So when people come in, tell me about this experience. What's it like?
Sure. So we serve residents of Ashland and Talent. So we do ask that people give us proof of their current address, and that's about it. We do enter household members so that we know the household size, and we have a little bit of an idea of our demographics, and all the information that we gather is kept only at the food bank. We are not integrated with any other systems, so your information is safe with us. Once you go through that intake desk, you're provided that shopping list, and you get to choose what you'd like from that shopping list. That shopping list goes to one of our volunteers, and our volunteer shops for you. Included on that shopping list, you can say, I need gluten-free food. I need low-salt food. I prefer organic. I'm a vegetarian or I'm a vegan. So we try to meet dietary requests and requirements if we can. While our volunteer is shopping for that client off their shopping list, then the client is welcome to go shop the free table area where all those short-dated perishables are that come from our local grocers.
And how often do they get to shop?
So off that shopping list, a housed family can come twice a month and receive 3 days worth of food off that shopping list. And then they also get to shop that free table area when they come for those shopping list visits. Then they can come two more times a month to shop that free table area. And, you know, people leave with 30 pounds of food sometimes from that free table area. It's quite, can be quite substantive. Our unhoused community is a little different. We do see our unhoused community as residents once they've established that they're remaining in the area for a period of time. And they can also kind of, so for the first 30 days, we see them as not yet a resident of our community because we have so many travelers coming up and down the I-5 corridor. Mm-hmm. But after 30 days, they're considered a resident of our community. That can get bypassed if they're working with ORA or they're working with Maslow or they're working with some other social service agency that can verify that they're remaining in our area. And then they can come four times a month to shop off of a shopping list. Our unhoused community cannot manage the amount of food that a housed person is provided in a single visit.
Right.
Our unhoused community also has some restrictions such as no refrigeration. They may not be able to cook. They may have dental issues that makes chewing difficult. They may have experienced such significant food insecurity that their digestion has changed. So the unhoused shopping list is slightly different than our housed shopping list, but it's offering the same amount of food over the course of a month.
Wow. Okay. So Amber, let's turn to you. Rogue Food Unites.
Rogue Food Unites was born out of the 2020 wildfires in direct response to the food needs of those that were affected here locally by the Almeda fires. We have continued to grow and adapt to meet the continuing needs of our community members that are experiencing food insecurity. We have several different programs that address those needs. One of them locally here is our Neighbors Unite no-cost mobile market, which we've spoken about before here. We serve about 2,000 individuals a week with access to organic produce and meat with no barrier to entry. So anybody that self-describes that they need assistance can come to our markets. It's equally about food and community building.
Where are those markets?
We have one in Talent on Thursdays, mm-hmm. one in Eagle Point on Wednesdays, and one in Medford on Tuesdays.
Are those all day or what?
They are from 4 to 6 p.m. In the Medford and Talent locations and 3 to 5 p.m. in the Eagle Point location.
Okay. And so anyone can show up and
anyone can show up and participate and have access to a week's worth of organic produce and meat. And it's a wonderful program. It's also important to us to highlight what is grown here and that there is enough food to go around. The fact that we have more food insecurity than we did in the Great Depression is absolutely unnecessary and shocking, and food is a human right.
Well, talk to me about the traffic flow that you've seen.
It has increased. We have seen a decrease in our Spanish-speaking community as a direct response to what's happening at a federal level, which we also make sure to keep everyone's information very safe. We want to provide a safe environment for anybody that comes to visit us. It's a really important service.
My guests are Amy Broker, Executive Director of the Ashland Community Food Bank, and Amber Ferguson, Executive Director of Rogue Food Unites. We're talking about food insecurity in the Rogue Valley and the impact of federal funding cuts. Amber, you mentioned the federal funding. What decisions are you concerned about at the federal level that may impact food security here in the Rogue Valley?
I mean, the cutting of support for food banking, the cutting of support for SNAP, of school meals are all detrimental to the success of our community. Not only do we – fed is best, we also need healthy food to begin to shift our own health and be more resilient as a community. I think that to underscore the importance of the food banking and the programs like Rogue Food Unites, we need everybody. And like the Ashland Community Food Bank does not receive federal funding, nor does Rogue Food Unites. We are really community-driven and supported. We receive some trickle-down support from organizations like the Oregon Health Authority and some of our local CCOs. But we need everybody's support to make sure that our community is fed.
So, Amy, how is that possible? Amber says neither one of you receive any federal funding. So where's this where's the support coming from? And by the way, how do you measure food insecurity?
So we, as Amber mentioned, we don't receive any federal funding. We're actually not part of the Oregon Food Bank program for reasons, primarily because we wanted to have the utmost agency in how we provided services. In addition to service at our facility, we provide food out to a couple of satellite pantries. We have one at the Senior Center here in Ashland. We have one at Ashland Library. We provide food to SOU's pantry. We also provide food, there's one more little free pantry at First Presbyterian Church that we provide for. And we also provide food to our schools. We provide meal kits to all the Head Start families twice a month. We provide food to in partnership with Access and Rotary Club to elementary school backpacks that go home with kids over the weekend that are experiencing greatest food insecurity. And we provide non-stigmatizing food to the middle school and high school. I mention that just because there's a considerable amount of freedom that we have in doing that that we would not necessarily have if we were participating in government programs. We also would not be able to receive that 350,000 pounds worth of perishable food that we were able to redistribute out to our community that was incredibly delicious and highly edible that would have otherwise gone to the trash. We could not do that if we were under the umbrella of a government agency. So how do we do it? We do it because we coordinate with our grocery stores for pickup of those food. We have two sister agencies that are critical to us, Food Angels, who picks up actually far more from those grocers than we do ourselves, and a vast majority of that food comes to us. And then Ashland Food Project. Ashland Food Project was born out of this community. It's a model that has been adopted in many places across the country, and it coordinates neighborhoods to donate food six times a year. We just had a food drive on Saturday. It was wildly successful. We had 60 volunteers show up to help us receive 31,000 pounds of food in 3 hours. And that's part of how we do it. The other way that we do it is through significant financial support from private donors. About 80% of our budget is all private donations. The other 20% is through local grantors. So there are small local grantors that are very focused on specific parts of our state and also focused on specific pillars of intention. And so we reach out to and hope to be funded by those grantors. And as federal monies for nonprofits are being eliminated, or reduced significantly, these smaller grantors are going to feel more and more pressure, which has already been happening over the last 2 years, to fund all of us. And the challenge with that is, so there's that piece. There's a whole lot more people in the same pool trying to receive the same amount of funds. The other factor is a lot of these small foundations are funded by the earnings of the family nut that started the foundation, and those earnings are based on the health of our stock market. So we have, and so many of our donors can give based on the health of the stock market as well.
So I never thought about the stock market plummeting.
The stock market plummeting impacts grantors. It impacts the ability of our local community members to be able to give to us.
Wow. And of course, the more need there is, the more work you have to do, the more logistics there are, and the more help you need.
The more expense that we have. And then there's food inflation. Right.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
So, Amber, the generosity of people in this region, with their money, with their time, how are you managing it at Rogue Food Unites? How many people work in your operation, and what do they do?
We have 15 full-time employees and 150 to 200 active volunteers weekly. We have several different programs within our organization. We have a disaster case management program that has continued from the 2020 wildfires to help see fire-affected individuals through their recovery. It's a very long and arduous process. We have an outreach program, which we're outreaching to far reaches of Oregon because we are contracted in all 36 counties to respond in cases of emergency.
Okay, well, let's hold it right there. We're going to take a short break. And before the break, we were talking about that plummeting stock market and how that has a pinch on the donations. We have lots of generous donors in this region and lots of volunteers, but when the money dries up, it dries up for everybody. Mm-hmm. How do you handle that? What's going on? How's that impacting your organizations?
For Rogue Foodie Nights, we have begun to try to diversify and create streams of revenue. So we're creating a MRE program, a freeze-dried meal program, which we are sourcing all ingredients from within the state of Oregon in the hopes that we will be able to generate revenue to support our other programs in order to give back to our community in the form of food.
Okay, so by diversifying the revenue streams, you're not completely dependent upon donors.
Correct. That's our goal. And, you know, as these funding streams do begin to dry up, there are more and more of us looking for the same grants, and being able to partner with each other and local organizations is the best way to not duplicate our efforts and to make sure we're supporting each other's missions.
Amy, how are you adjusting?
You know, we've been a bootstrap organization for 50 years, 50 plus years. So we can do quite a lot with not very much. That said, food costs money. So our board's actively strategic planning right now to determine what our best paths may be, plan A, plan B, plan C, because it's so unpredictable right now what might really be happening down the road. We're working stronger with some partners, some vendor partners, to work on cost. And we're considering if we can continue to offer as much as we currently offer. It's a very difficult question when people are showing up at your door because they're feeling more insecure than ever to say, I'm so sorry, I may not be able to give you as much moving forward.
Well, before the break, you were talking about logistics as well. I mean, there's a lot of food that comes into your organizations. It has to be moved. It has to be processed. It has to be distributed in a timely fashion. How do you manage waste?
We try to make sure that we have zero waste. On Tuesdays today, we receive all of our produce for the week for our markets. At the end of the week, we go through all of what we have left, which is pretty minimal at this point. And if there's anything we can process within our freeze-dried program, we will. Otherwise, we push it out to other community organizations and make sure that we don't have any waste. And we communicate openly between organizations pretty frequently as to make sure that is achievable.
We've been the beneficiaries of that at times. We're very happy to, not very happy, but we are very, part of our mission, sustainability is written into our mission. Part of that is food sustainability. So we do absolutely have some waste because what is sent to us from our grocers sometimes isn't edible. But we have a wonderful program with multiple pig farmers in the area who come pick up any food that we are not able to service out to clients. And logistically, that's a lot of time. It takes a lot of volunteer effort to sort through all of that food, to determine the channels for that food. We sometimes are able to get that out to, for example, the night lawn. Like we may get a whole bunch of fried chicken in from Safeway or Albertsons or one of our local delis. And it really needs to get, let's say it comes in on Friday. Well, we have a window of acceptable redistribution after we receive that food. And some of that's based on the dating on the product that's provided to us. And sometimes we just need to get it out in 24 hours, but we're not open over the weekend except for one Saturday a month. We are open the third Saturday of every month. We're open, but otherwise we're not open on the weekend. So what do we do with that food? We get it out. There's a free meal program at noon at the library. There's a number of people in the area who will get food out to the night lawn. When the winter shelter was open at 2200 Street, we sent a lot of food to the shelter at 2200 Street to help feed those folks. And the other piece that I really feel is important to mention is dating on shelf-stable products is a completely random, there's absolutely no logic, no law to it whatsoever. And we have a lot of, there's organizations who have done a tremendous amount of study around dating on shelf-stable foods. And as a blanket statement, it's not 100% true, but as a blanket statement, shelf-stable food is good for a good 2 years past its date. So we redistribute a lot of food that people may not be willing to purchase because they pick it up at the store and they're like, I'm not going to pay for this. It's outdated by a month. Well, the reality is that food is just as good as it was the month earlier.
We've all been trained to do that.
We've been trained to do that. And that's why a lot of food gets wasted in our communities. And it's a very difficult thing to know that there are a lot of hungry people out there and a lot of food getting thrown away unnecessarily. So we're quite committed to making sure that we're distributing food that so that it does not go to waste.
So let's talk about how food insecurity is impacting our most vulnerable populations in the region, and that's children. Now, what are you both seeing in Ashland and the surrounding region when it comes to families and kids?
I think that the numbers are rising quickly, and if we are set to reduce drastically our WIC and SNAP and school meals and Head Start programs, and we're going to see a crushing need show up at both the community food banks and our programs, and it will be devastating to those of us that are in service to not be able to meet the growing need.
Well, talk more about SNAP and WIC. What are those?
SNAP is food stamps, and WIC is for women and children. And those programs, especially during COVID, were much higher amounts, and they have been continuing to get cut back more and more. Amy may have more clear numbers on those two programs.
Yeah, we as COVID relief programs sunsetted spring of 23, over the course of the month of March, we saw a 100% increase in demand in a 30-day window.
Did you say 100%?
I said 100% increase in demand. So we have a metric to go, okay, so what happens if they cut SNAP further, or they cut WIC further, or they eliminate the school lunch, breakfast and lunch programs? We, as Amber's saying, it's going to be a tidal wave. And we did it once, we'll do it again. We can do this if we work together.
Is there an understanding? Is there I'm just trying to make sure there's no cognitive dissonance between the folks who are making these laws, making these decisions, and what's happening on the ground floor. Are they aware?
I think it's really probably the only thing that I can think is they have never been food insecure. They have never been housing insecure. They do not understand how many people are a paycheck away from no longer affording their housing. We had this glorious food drive over the weekend. It was beautiful, so much community participation. It's an amazing event. If ever you can join us, we'd love to have you. And I had more people ask me at that event how they can access our services. I've never had somebody ask me at a food drive how they can access our services. And I had people who were participating in the food drive ask me about how to access services because of job losses, 50% of their department cut. You know, these types of stories happening.
Okay, well, we have a minute left. Do we have any solutions?
We need your community support.
Community, community, community.
Please.
Well,
please.
Food prices are higher now. That means they're higher at the, at the farmer's market. They're higher at the point of production. How does that affect you?
It affects our bottom line. We are not able to purchase as much. We're not able to serve as many.
A lot of organic food comes out of Mexico, which is now heavily tariffed. So they purchase. Rogue Food Unites has a great commitment to organic food. We also, all of our produce is organic that we distribute. So there's a cost.
Well, it seems like there's a domino effect. Food insecurity leads to hunger, which leads to health issues, which leads to disruptions in one's ability to work, which leads to less income, which leads to more food insecurity.
And precisely. Houselessness. Yeah.
Yep, and houselessness. And our senior population is going to hurt a lot.
Oh, my word. Okay.
Thank you. Support our work.
Yes.
Unfortunately, we are running out of time, but thank you both for the work that you do.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking time with us.
Thank you.